just like being John Malkovich, everyone in the world is Woody Allen as well. Because, you know, we've got the technology to do that.
You know, actually, seriously, that does sound appealing.
This is the Geek Word of Mouth podcast for November 5th, 2011. I'm John.
I'm Hen.
I'm Will.
What should we start with, guys?
We can start with Grand Theft Auto 5. Have you guys seen it?
I saw the trailer. It looks real good.
I'm surprised you're a fan. Well, I think maybe this came up last time, but it doesn't seem like the kind of game that you would necessarily...
I enjoyed Saints Row more than GTA.
Well, that's
I'm a massive sucker for any sandbox game where I get to drive things. And obviously the main kind of game that's had that has been GTA. And ever since I played GTA 3, I sort of got hooked and I've never lost that enthusiasm for it.
So what about you, Hen? What annoys you about it, or is it just simply it just doesn't appeal?
Yeah, it's GTA, I've never been appealed to that. It's great for you to have all this freedom and at that time, but the story element is usually the major attraction for me in a game, and it wasn't there for me. I know it had a good gangster story implemented in that series, but I don't know. It's just never really... I guess I'm still not weaned from the Japanese RPG where they tell you where to go and tell you where to, you know, what to do and, you know, grind and all that stuff. So, but I can see the appeal, though. But GTA never appealed to me for some reason.
I see it as satire.
Yeah, I think that's actually certainly where the series has its roots, the first game. They've always sort of been very keen to satirize, well, pretty much everything, really. Clothes, cars, radio.
Okay. Yeah, the novelty of, like, you know, being free reign and, hey, you actually can beat somebody up and steal their car and all that stuff. I know people got a kick out of that when it initially started, but for me, it's like, okay, I can do that, but, you know, I really don't want to. So it's not really a, you know, a big plus for me. Maybe that's one of the big draw that people like this game so much, or this series so much, is because, you know, they're allowed to go bonkers, but I never have that desire to go bonkers, even in a game. It's maybe that's the reason why it doesn't hit me as much as some people.
Okay.
Well, that's fair enough. Yeah. Yeah.
I think it was at the top of my list because it made huge gaming news. I mean, everyone sort of knew that there was another one coming, and it's such a massive, you know, money spinner for Take-Two and Rockstar. Well, let's move along. I guess that's probably enough said. It's a great trailer.
I think looks like the protagonist is going to be a bit older. I guess makes sense considering that the age... I mean, GTA 3 was about 10 years ago now.
Do you think it's the same guy?
I don't think it is, no. But it makes sense that, you know, as the players get older, the protagonists might sort of get older as well a little bit.
Yeah, that's sensible.
Well, last time they were in San Andreas, it was with CJ, right? Yeah. Who was pretty young and pretty stupid to begin with, at least. You know, he learned a bit over the course of the game. So I think it's good that they're going to have a protagonist who's maybe slightly older, maybe knows a bit more what things should be like.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what shakes out. But any guess on a release date? Probably be 2013 at the earliest, I'm guessing.
Yeah, probably.
So, all right. Well, any other big titles you guys are playing, looking forward to,
actually,
excited about, or maybe
this
old
week,
titles?
it's not old. It certainly came out, you know, this year, but it was earlier this year. A game called Bastion. It's an indie game. I've been playing it a lot this week because I knew that we'd be doing this podcast, and I thought I've got to play something, you know. So I played Bastion. It was recommended to me by a friend who blogged about it. He said it was great, and it is. It's sort of like a Diablo, you know, a roguelike or gauntlet-like kind of third-person action-adventure, vaguely RPG-ish game. It's really, really pretty. The graphics are... It's sort of, I guess, JRPG-inspired in terms of the style, but actually not in terms of the gameplay.
Yeah, I tried it out, and basically, John, if you're not familiar with it, it's... The reason why it turned me off was the outline of the environment. Basically, whenever you walk, there'll be like the environment and the land would drop from the sky and fill in as you walk along. And to me, that just...
You didn't like that. I thought that was really cool. I thought that was unique and interesting. And I mean,
it comes up from the ground, isn't it? From below.
It does, yeah. It's sort of... The
Displacing
Islands.
The biggest thing that I think that stood out for me for that game was the narration, though.
Yes, I was going to talk about that, yeah.
The constant...
The kid did this.
Yeah, he narrates almost everything you do.
And there's some variation as well, isn't there?
So. Yeah, in a good way, though. I mean, and, you know, if you're blocking a lot or something, then he'll comment on that. If you've picked up sort of a certain set of equipment, then he'll comment on that. I think it's nice in some ways that the game is paying attention to what you're doing.
Yeah, I knew about the game because it's one of the, I think the lead designer is Greg Kasavin, who was at GameSpot, and he was one of the sort of reviewers that I really liked. I thought he was really charismatic, you know, in his reviews. Just, you know, obviously made the transition to creating games. And so I was interested to see it, but for some reason it didn't completely grab me. I tried the demo as well, and I'm willing to give it a shot at some point, but just been, you know, snowed on, you know, just had so many other things that I wanted to play more, I think. So, but no, that's a good recommendation. I think, you know, it's come highly recommended from other people as well. Giant Bombcast guys seem to love it, but I think they have there's a connection, obviously, there, because they're ex-GameSpot guys as well, so...
As for me, what I'm playing now is, you wouldn't believe, is Blood Bowl Legend.
Oh, right.
Okay.
Right. I can understand the review and why, you know, some people didn't like it and whatnot, but for some reason, I can't stop playing that thing. And the other game I'm playing also is Might and Magic 6 Heroes.
Are they still making those? Gosh.
Yeah, that just came out, didn't it?
Yeah, it just came out, and it looks sweet, and I'm going through the mechanics right now. It's interesting. I played, like, I think number 3.
I got quite hooked on. I think it was the second one.
But they changed a lot in this new one, and there's some gripe about, you know, the town. You can't look at the town map anymore, but I don't have any hard feelings for them getting rid of that. But what I really don't like about it, it seems a little bit... You got to be efficient on where you go, because the monsters, if you leave them alone enough, each week they get bigger. Each week they multiply.
Right.
So you're kind of in a rush to really get to the creatures and annihilate them quick before. And for me, if I play an RPG, I like it to be relaxed and just my own pace. But I can see why they need to do that too, because, you know, there's got to be a challenging meter for that type of game. So. It's give and take. I enjoy it so far. It's huge. Have you guys messed with it or seen it?
I haven't. Like I said, I played one of the very old ones now, and I quite enjoyed that. I think my feeling was that it was... I think Heroes of Might and Magic 3 was a lot like Heroes of Might and Magic 2, which was a lot like the first one. And I sort of worry... I mean, I'm surprised that they're still going at 6. I'm surprised it's not maybe more if it's, you know, still popular.
But yeah, they got they got a cult following, so they'll still make it.
I think, so. Yeah, you're right, that's it. As long as people are happy with it and will keep buying it, then it makes sense.
Have you played any of the King's Bounty series, Hen?
Oh my, I play a lot of games, and I did, but I know I played it, but I forgot the mechanics and the details, because, like I said, so many games that, yes, I play 1 and 2. It's a kind of defensive tower defense, right? Where you build your castle and...
Maybe on the overworld, but I think the battle system is very similar to Might and Magic, or at least the classic Might and Magic, you know.
Yeah, if it's the one I'm thinking of, it's a lot more detailed. There is some town management there, but the core of it is basically setting up your defense and storming the castles. It's been a while, but yeah. It is similar in that, but Might and Magic, Stormling Castle is very simplified in that all you have is a siege engine, which is automatically given to you during a siege, and your range will basically try to take out your people inside the castle, and you have your own magic power to implement that, but the melee pretty much stands out there and just dink at the wall, and that's it, so far anyway, from where I am. So it's not, you know, grandiose where you like you have oil set up or flaming arrow or boulders and stuff like that. It's not as developed as that. And I think King's Bounty had that.
Okay. So yeah. I think I have them because I got them on a Steam sale for like nothing. But
yeah. They're good games.
Yeah, it struck me as like the presentation was really good, but there was just some level that I just couldn't, some level of abstraction that I just couldn't get over.
Hmm.
I mean, it seems like these days, like it's so crowded, you know, in terms of the variety of experiences that you can have, especially with all the indie stuff.
Oh yeah,
that it's really hard, you know, finding that slice of time to devote. But no, myself, I've been playing a couple indie games. One I just heard about recently called Stealth Bastard.
It's a good name.
Yeah.
What's that about?
Well, in the subtitle, it's written like Metal Gear Solid, where it says Tactical Espionage Arsehole, which I find quite funny. But it's a lot like Super Meat Boy. So very sort of fairly tight controls. And I've been playing it. It's free on the PC. So you just go to stealthbastard.com, and I just use an Xbox 360 controller, and it's about just like hiding in shadows and puzzle gameplay where you die a lot, and that's kind of the idea of it. I'm still early into the game, and the challenge is ramping up quite quickly. But I think a lot of people like Super Meat Boy, and I think this would definitely appeal to that crowd. Isn't necessarily me. I like the Metal Gear Solid sort of references. So
it's a side scroller, right?
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, have you tried Limbo?
Yeah, I loved Limbo. Actually, I really enjoyed Limbo.
Yeah, Limbo. Yeah, I played that recently too, and yeah, it was very fun. Although short, it was an interesting experience. The way they set it up is really nice.
What appealed to me most about Limbo is, although the puzzles might have been really difficult, you had such a limited set of, you know, you could either go back, forward, run, or jump, and that's really all you had. And the checkpointing was, you know, one of the best in any game. So, because, I mean, like Super Meat Boy, it was about dying a lot, but, you know, you immediately had a chance to fix the mistake. And I think it was a bit cheap in some ways, you know, like you obviously didn't know what was going to happen. You know, something would collapse and you'd die really easily. But that was actually one of the few games that has really gripped me in the last like few years, where I just was dying to get through it, was hooked straight through the end.
Yeah, the atmosphere they applied when you first start the game, it kind of reminds me of an old game called Outworld.
Okay.
Where you know, get transported into this alien planet and...
Oh, and out of this world?
Yeah, out of this world, correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which they've recently released on iOS.
Oh, really?
Strangely enough, yeah.
Well, that's... I mean, there's no narrative, no nothing. You just, boom, and you feel like you're in the environment already. And somehow they, you know, pull that off with the music and with the action of the characters. You just get involved, and that's what Limbo did. And I don't want to spoil the ending, but it kind of leaves you hanging, because it doesn't explain what the ending means. And I've been to the forums, and there's like a huge debate and interpretation of groups of people on what the ending means. So that's kind of good, because, you know, with a game like that making people, you know, wanting to know what happened, it's pretty good, you know, testament to what they're doing.
Yeah, I think Limbo and Shadow Complex are probably my two favorite Xbox Live downloadable games. Because I think they both did fairly well critically and commercially. So,
I recently saw Transformers. Boy, was that a pain. I fell asleep.
What, Dark of the Moon?
Oh, the third one. Or the second one? I don't know.
Dark Side of the Moon.
That's the Pink Floyd album.
Well,
that's what they're going for.
Right? Yeah, well, presumably. You just turn all the lights off, close your eyes, and listen.
Or play Wizard of Oz at the same time.
Well, they were saying that the movie's, you know, kind of okay, but if you see it in 3D, it'll just enhance it a little more. But I didn't see it in 3D, and I mean, the action's great and all that, but it's like, I don't know. I just didn't feel for anybody in the whole movie, especially the main character. That guy, he's like somebody I don't like.
Well, Shia LaBeouf.
Yes, LaBeoufer, whatever it is. Yeah, because, you know, the way he acts, it's like he's really an angry person. He, like, I know you're trying to get in the moment, but, you know, I'd rather have a character that's, like, vulnerable or, like, don't know what he's doing, kind of Woody Allen in that type of situation, than somebody who's just...
Woody Allen and Transformers.
That would be hilarious, you know?
It would, but for the right reasons.
Yeah. Isn't that what Shia LaBeouf was kind of typecast as? I mean, he was in the first film, he was the sort of geek, sort of neurotic.
Yeah, but somehow
but
it didn't
so
turn out
so neurotic that, you know, he couldn't but, hit on.
Yeah, that's true.
Women.
Well, isn't that what Woody Allen does? I mean, I think what would be interesting is having Woody Allen now, you know, running around.
With Transformers.
It could be a 5-minute film with I don't know.
Well, it'd be great if, you know, what's great about Woody Allen is that he acts out on...
Sorry, are you serious about this? You'd like to see Woody Allen with the Transformers? Is
yes.
That something
I think it'd be a great...
To see? You'd pay money for that.
I'd pay money for that. I think it would be a great marriage. Because, you know...
It would certainly make cinematic history, I think.
I mean, yeah. It would be two very different genres just being mashed together. In, you know, there would be human in the middle. Bits of robot.
That's why they label movies sometimes as action comedy or like romantic comedy. So I don't see that as a big, you know, milestone or anything. I mean, or just some character that, like, you know, because my problem with LaBeouf is that he just basically does whatever he doesn't. He doesn't contemplate. He doesn't think, hey, maybe this is the best way. He just does it, and there's no explanation of that build-up.
Of course, the Michael Bay films, though, isn't it? I mean,
yeah. You're right.
Maybe he seems to spend a lot of time kind of going, well, now why am I doing this? Oh, there's an explosion. It's fine.
Yeah. I also saw Green Lantern. It was okay. It's not that bad as people, you know, gripe about it, but it's not that great either.
I don't know. I swore off Green Lantern when a long time ago, I saw a very early version of the script, and it was a comedy with Jack Black.
Huh.
And I just sort of thought at that point they've really missed whatever it was they were going for. You know, like, Green Lantern sort of got this incredibly powerful wishing ring, sort of super powerful superhero, generally flying around, having a good time, a cosmic element to it, and you're casting Jack Black.
Yeah, that would be a horrible, horrible mistake from the movie industry, but thank God it didn't happen. Not that it's great now, but...
Kind of explains why they got Ryan Reynolds, though, I guess, because... You know, he's seen as a sort of semi-comedic actor, he is a comedic actor, isn't he? He's not
a comedic superhero actor, in fact, having played Deadpool in
Wolverine
spin-off. Yeah,
which is what I've heard was fairly apropos for Deadpool, because he's supposed to be sort of wisecracking, you know, type of guy. And I'm not sure if Ryan Reynolds was exactly the right choice, but for someone who doesn't really
know
the
comics, he's a
bit
pretty, really, isn't he? I don't know, that's my feeling.
I think he is a pretty boy sort of actor.
I got the impression that he's not very personable. Like, he's a jerk from some people.
What, in real life? Or?
Yeah, in real life. So, you know, that's just what I heard, so I don't know him personally.
What about Woody Allen? Would he... He'd be more personable.
I think
he had done Green Lantern and Transformers.
Yeah, he would be very personable.
That would be an interesting film.
Woody Allen as Green Lantern.
Woody Allen in all the iconic roles for the last sort of 15 years.
I'm telling you, you just hit gold.
Woody Allen in Matrix.
That would
make
be
so
gold.
Much money.
Yeah.
Probably just from the three of us. But, you know.
Who's your dream team? You know, so you've got Woody Allen, David Carradine, except he's dead, isn't he? I don't know.
Well, you know, dream team, right? So why can't we dream that he's alive?
Okay.
Okay.
Let's see here. William Shatner.
Randy Quaid.
Randy Quaid.
Yeah, not Dennis Quaid. Randy Quaid.
Okay. I'm looking at the list. Is it true that they're coming out with a live-action Akira?
Yeah, it's been sort of bandied about for quite a while now.
A long time, yeah.
Originally, it's something that Will Smith was attached to. And did you hear that?
Yes, no, I remember that.
But I guess it's still going forward. I just don't know how they're going to rectify. It's a very Japanese story to my mind, especially with the character names. And having a Western Hollywood-approved cast, I just don't know how that would play.
I think even the ideas are sort of Japanese. You know, it plays on this fear of mass destruction and things a bit, doesn't it?
Right. It's kind of a straight, almost an ironic turn, you know, to have, you know, the country that sort of, you know, caused all the mass destruction, you know, be producing the film and making loads of money from it. So,
the thing is, I don't know if I trust even the Japanese movie market to make a good Akira either, because I've seen some of the live action that they translate from the manga or anime, and it's not all that great.
They just don't have the budget, do they? They don't have quite the industry.
Well, yeah, it's one of those things, isn't it? I mean, this is slightly off on a tangent, but it will come back to the point. Joss Whedon, obviously he made Buffy and Firefly, and after those series were finished, he continued them with comics. And he said that the comics were great because you could just do whatever shot you wanted, you know? There was no consideration of the special effects budget, of, you know, whether we could get that many extras to dress up in whatever, you know, any of that sort of stuff. You could just do what you wanted and have the people draw the pictures, and the viewer will sort of use their imagination to fill the rest of it in. And there's a lot of that in anime and manga. And so live action things are not cheap to do this sort of stuff in. I'm trying to think of stuff I've seen that hasn't been completely terrible. The live action Death Note is not completely terrible. It's a little bit terrible, but it's not completely terrible.
Have you guys seen the Battleship Yamamoto?
No, Yamato?
They got pretty close to what the... I was never a fan of the anime, but they got pretty close to, you know, what the anime was. Even the captain looks like the captain in the anime.
Harlock or something, right?
Yeah, but, you know, I was never a fan, so it didn't appeal to me. But it was interesting. And also, there. I don't know if you're familiar with Gantz.
The
manga?
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, these two teenagers, they were running, going to be ran over by a subway, and all of a sudden they got teleported into this room, and there's a black giant ball in the middle of the room, and they got teleported with other people who were also about to die. And so they found out, you know, that it's kind of a game for this machine that encourages you to go out and do missions for it, for the ball or the guy inside, or named Gantz. Anyways, they did a live translation of that, and it was decent, but it wasn't, you know, a wow factor as they could have done.
Sure.
But I don't know about Akira. That'd be a tough call, but, you know, special effects today are pretty good, so I think they can pull it off pretty well. The story is not really Japanese-ish. It's more of the way they, you know, act. You know, there's a lot of screaming involved, and there's a lot of, you know, because that's
the
way they
talk.
The
idea of motorcycle gangs as well is, I mean, okay, yeah, it's not a uniquely Japanese thing, but when they were making it, you know, motorcycle gangs were a big deal in Japan, and I guess they weren't really in America. Maybe
I would have
thought 30 years before, or even here, you know, mods and rockers and things, but that's still like the early 70s. I don't know. It's a bit before my time, unfortunately. But it doesn't have that same sense of this could potentially be the future. It's got a bit of, I don't know, when you watch sort of 1950s sci-fi things with laser guns and beautiful alien princesses and things, or like the time machine or something like that, you know, it all feels like old-fashioned science fiction slightly. and it's got the cyberpunk elements and things like that, which have slightly disappeared from modern science fiction.
Who do you guys think would be a good director for that?
Ron Howard. No, I can't remember who's attached to it. It's I think it's a Spanish or a French guy. I can't remember.
Oh, no. No, not a French director. I'm
Katsuhiro Otomo.
I don't recall any good sci-fi French directors.
Jean-Pierre Jeunet, he did The City of Lost Children, and okay, yes, he also did Alien Resurrection, but you can't have a go for that.
I can't remember what else he's done. Amelie or something? Did
yes.
he do Amelie? Yeah.
Yeah. Delicatessen, which is very science fiction-y, actually.
Is it?
It's sort of post-apocalyptic in lots of ways, or kind of, I don't know quite what's going on there. It's certainly not the real world.
The director is Yom Colette Serra, which I don't know if he's French or not, but
it sounds a little
bit probably
French.
I don't know how to pronounce it.
When you say it with a French accent, it sounds quite French. I mean,
was that an appropriation of a?
It was Jonathan Jones, I think. I'm not sure.
What do you guys think of the Matrix directors?
Wachowskis.
Wachowski brothers.
What, in general?
Yeah, to be directing Akira.
Oh, that might be interesting.
I'm still cross with them for V for Vendetta. Not to mention the two later Matrix sequels. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. But I guess, I mean, they're used to that type of, you know, cyberpunk and special effects. So.
It's not a terrible suggestion.
Or we can go there if we want. Woody Allen.
Woody Allen.
That'd be an interesting take.
I have nothing to add.
What about the Blade Runner sequel? What's the deal about that?
Yeah, it's just like a minor news point. Like, basically, Ridley Scott says that there will be some kind of film, and it won't be a prequel, but it will be some kind of sequel. Because I think initially they were saying, oh, it will be a prequel showing how the replicants escaped originally or something. I don't know. I might be just making that up.
I hate prequels. I really do.
Well,
I think there is a time and a place for them. It depends sort of a bit on who's doing it and when and why and things. I think a prequel to Blade Runner would suck. I think a sequel to Blade Runner would suck. I mean, we've got the final cut of Blade Runner now, you know. This is it. That should be the end. There's no more you can do to it, you know, really. It should just, that's it, that's over now.
Yeah, I think it can only, it'd just be a risky proposition, you know. I mean, they rarely do the sequels come along to these, you know, standout, really popular. I mean, it's a cult following, I suppose. It wasn't that big of a box office success originally.
But, I mean, it routinely does pretty well in, you know, 100 greatest films of all time lists. Depending on who you ask. I mean, it normally is somewhere in the top 10.
I think it was ahead of its time, you know, personally.
Absolutely.
People just didn't understand it, and it's...
I love Blade Runner. It's one of my very, very favourite films.
It's mine.
I know, John, feel the same way, yeah.
I would have to say any attempt to
sort of add things at the beginning or the end of it, it just seems so unnecessary. Anyway.
Yeah.
Well, he's a detective, right? So, I mean, it could be, you know, implemented in there that, you know, his next case would be, you know, something as just as dramatic as the one he was given. So I can see it being continued.
But ultimately, you know, will it be about the same thing? You know, what makes humanity, you know, what, you know, about artificial intelligence and just what makes us human?
Yeah, I mean, the strong point of Blade Runner is not quite the plot, really. It's about, as you say, the questions of humanity, and it's the writing, the individual conversations and things that people say, and the style and the way it's shot and all that kind of stuff. The plot, it's all right, you know, but it's not the focus.
Yeah, I doubt I have any confidence of the writers or the production to, you know, do another good sequel. But I think it's possible, though, because there's plenty of other morals and philosophies or whatever, you can go along with the, not necessarily machine and human beings and whatnot, but, you know, something in the vein where, like, in the future, so you can come up with a lot of scenarios that will make it work.
I just don't know if there's anything that's that central to our existence that would mean as much. If people had trouble getting, understanding the film 30 years ago, you know, that basic idea, I just don't see that they're any better to understand it, you know, given... If to make a film commercially successful, to make it commercially viable and to play to an audience that needs to be essentially, or at least, you know, the producers think they need to be told everything. You know, everything has to be spelled out. I'm really skeptical, but I'd love to see it. I mean, I love the world that they've created, and some of those questions are interesting, you know.
Have you guys seen that movie called Moon?
Yes.
About this...
I enjoyed that.
That's another, I mean, it's not, you know, android or robotic, but it's another form of questioning of what makes somebody unique. So I think if they want to do that, they can also go to that vein where, you know, cloning has gone to the point where people are abusing it.
Yeah, but I see. But essentially you'd be telling the same story again, which really has not a lot of artistic merit, you know, or intrinsic value as far as I'm concerned, you know.
Well,
why
you
tell
can,
the same story again? You can just watch the original film.
Well, the point of that is you can add into the argument. I mean it wasn't resolved. I mean, it's just basically, from what I remember, it's just a concept that it's at the end was put out there. You know, what, you know, that's what he's contemplating. So this is just add along to the...
I think that was the whole point. It wasn't to, you know, it wasn't about the surface, you know, plot. It was more to get you to think about what makes us human. And sure, they could explore that some more, but it's already sort of been broached.
Yeah.
Well, it'd be interesting to see anyway.
It all depends on how they do it. So I think it's doable, but, you know, that's with the percentage of, you know, horrible sequels out there, I think it's going to be a tough thing to pull off if they do it.
No, I agree. It seems to me that Hollywood is really, really struggling with the idea of bankrolling a film not based on a book or a TV show or a live action adaptation of something else, or a prequel or a sequel. I read something that said that the last film, which had grossed over $100 million, you know, the kind of borderline for success in Hollywood, that wasn't based on any of those things, was Inception, which is, I mean, it's a good film and everything, but the fact that it had only happened once, I think in 2010, was worrying to me. Maybe it's, you know, a problem with the film industry generally. They're suffering because fewer people are going to see films and fewer people are spending their money on that kind of stuff.
Original ideas are hard to come by nowadays, or original movies. So
I think, I'm not quite sure if that included Avatar as well as an original idea or not. I assume it probably didn't, because that must have made it an absolute ton of money and was based on the original concept.
Yeah, Dances with Wolves, right? Dances with Wolves. That's what people are comparing it to. That idea of, you know, some Western guy going to the natives and befriending them, and then all of a sudden turns or makes a U-turn and goes against his own group.
Yeah.
It's been told before.
So. Yeah, I heard Dances with Wolves, Pocahontas, and a little bit of Fern Gully, The Lost Rainforest, a beloved film from my childhood.
Well, speaking of sequels, aren't they doing a number two, Avatar?
I'm sure they are. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's basically no way you could. If he thought he could get away with Titanic 2, I'm sure James Cameron would, you know.
I'd pay to see Titanic
coming back
2.
In 3D.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he hasn't done just a sci-fi re-envisioning of Titanic. I mean, that's what Avatar should have been.
Starship Titanic.
Yeah, there you go.
After the...
The game, the...
Douglas Adams, yeah.
Which I heard was great, actually.
It's great if you love your text-based adventure games.
Which some do. Still, you know, they have Interactive Fiction Awards still.
Oh, right.
I don't know how popular they are, because I haven't played any of them. But I think it has its own niche, so...
Right. Is that like films recast with Woody Allen in the sort of lead role? It's got a niche, you know.
Yes. And there should be a niche of interactive games of films with Woody Allen in the lead role.
With Woody Allen. Then, right.
Or Woody Allen as all the characters.
Would that change Starship Titanic a lot? I mean, what do you think? You'd wake up and it would also happen that you were Woody Allen, but you know.
And just like being John Malkovich, everyone in the world is Woody Allen as well. Because, you know, we've got the technology to do that.
You know, actually, seriously, that does sound appealing.
I think you have a Woody Allen fetish.
That's quite weird taste. Like, I mean, I don't want to criticize you because, you know, everybody has their own taste, but it's quite weird, yours. It's quite strange.
Well, that's what Woody Allen specialized, right? His parody. And he does a lot of parodies on his movies. So I think Titanic would be a awesome thing if he did that. Have you guys seen his recent movie? I think Midnight in Paris or something?
No, I have not.
Don't. It's horrible. It's one of the few Woody Allen movies.
Yeah, I'd sort of heard he'd slightly lost whatever it was that made him good with Annie Hall and, you know, all the other ones.
Yeah. The movie was pretty cheesy. Basically, this writer goes to Paris and each... I don't want to spoil it, but, you know, he
I'll spoil away. I'm not going to see it.
At midnight in Paris, he goes back in time and meets other writers in who are also in Paris, like, you know, Hemingway and you know, the famous Picasso. So he meets all these interesting people, and they help him write his book. And but, you know, the guy who stars in it, his name is Owen Wilson. Anyways, he's not good in this role at all, in my opinion. He was miscast because I didn't feel anything for him at all. So if they got another character, maybe.
Are there good Owen Wilson films?
Tenenbaums?
Yeah, no, I was going to mention, actually. I quite like him in the role of Tenenbaums. That's all right. But otherwise...
Yeah. I don't...
What was it? Steve Zissou? Whatever. All right in those... I can't think of the director's name. The Russian director. Wes Anderson.
Wes Anderson, yeah. No, I couldn't get into that, sorry. No, I just quite like A Beach Filled with Jellies. Well, yeah.
Oh, exactly.
Standing in for jellyfish. It was quite a nice image.
Going another vein, are you guys excited about... or have you already been playing Arkham City?
I'm waiting
Not
to
yet.
Play it
yeah.
on PC.
Me also, yes.
Because they had a deal on Steam.
Yes.
If you already own the original, you could get the new game at 20% off or something.
Yeah, after you mentioned it, I was there, you know, putting my credit card details in as quickly as I could.
Yeah, that and Skyrim is coming out, so, oh my god, that's going to take a
There's
lot of my
so
time.
There's so many games, like, I mean, we're due another Assassin's Creed game, and having never touched any of them, sort of 3 or 4 months ago, I played through Assassin's Creed, Assassin's Creed 2, and Assassin's Creed Brotherhood in the space of about four weeks.
Oh, you did. Wow.
I love them so much. I love the free
really?
Running. I love the world. I mean, Altair I always thought was a bit boring, but Ezio is really fun. So, yeah, I can't wait for Revelations. Plus, apparently, actual... Revelations, like they're going to tell you what the plot's about. And everything.
Finally, yeah.
Yeah, right. None of this sort of cryptic hologram nonsense. No, no. It's going to be proper. This is what was happening all those times when things were happening.
So the answers won't lead to more questions.
Indeed.
What about Desmond? Is Desmond going to be
now? Fuck Desmond. He's a bit boring.
He's Nolan.
No, seriously. Like, I mean, I was kind of half rooting for him through the first game. And then he sort of got out and he was a bit of a dick. no, not really massively a dick, but I don't know. It felt like the relationship between him and Lucy just felt a bit forced, really.
Mm.
Why can't people in video games that are male and female ever just, you know, be friends? Why is that not a thing that can happen? It saddens me.
Uncharted waters, right? Or Uncharted. Yeah, isn't the chicken there their friend too?
I think there's some tension between
Drake. I'm only playing someone else. I don't know. I've never played them. I'm pretty sure his name's Drake.
I want to say Elsa. Yeah, it's Nathan Drake.
Okay. His name even made it into the subtitle for the third game. So.
Well, I only played the first one, so I haven't played the second one yet. So I guess there is a romantic connection between those two, but on the first one, it seems they were just friends. So
that's... I think there was tension.
Yeah, the first Assassin's Creed game is a bit of tension.
Elena.
And the second one, a bit more tension. And then by the third one, you know, it seems clear where that's going. And okay, maybe relationships are a bit like that, but... No, absolutely. With Assassin's Creed, that really annoys me, actually, because between the end of the first game and the beginning of the second game, her uniform changes. She turns up, you know, dressed fairly sensibly. It's sort of a cardigan, skirt and tights, and a lab coat. Not completely normal, but not desperately over-sexualized.
For a scientist,
between that... Yeah, I mean, she was a scientist, she was working there, and I wouldn't have made a massive objection. But between that and the second game, the next time you see her, you know, she's wearing this very, very tight top, the lab coat is long gone, and the short skirt remains. And then, you know, from there, I don't know, it just felt weird to me, because in theory, no time had passed between those two games. And, you know, you'd seen her dressed one way in the first game.
It'll be one of the revelations.
The way the male character had dressed, no change at all, of course. You know,
they'll explain it in Revelations, I'm sure.
This is
what happened. This is what the game's really about. It's a commentary on...
But that's what the players have been demanding, really, isn't it? Absolutely. They wanted to know why Lucy's uniform changed from between Assassin's Creed and Assassin's Creed 2.
Yeah, sod the piece of Eden stuff, you know, just... get to the bottom of
some nonsense about gods. I don't even know, but the clothing thing, I mean, that's really where I want to find out what's going on. Yeah,
no, but it does bug me, because I think it's just, you know, at least have some variety. You know, I was thinking about it with Rage, because a lot of the characters, you know, it's a post-apocalyptic world, and nearly all of the female characters are quite, you know, they're obviously there as eye candy. You know, they're just there to give you missions and whatnot, and it's just, it does break the immersion. You know, you're just kind of going, okay, this is supposed to be a post-apocalyptic world, and all the women are, you know, pretty attractive to look at. You know, there's one woman called Siri, oddly enough, in Subway Town, who's not quite so, because she's an older lady, and you might mistake her for some wizened old man, actually, just looking at her. But beyond that, I haven't really met any. You know, I mean, there's supposed to be like mutants running around and whatnot. It's just boring in some ways. But I mean, it happens in Hollywood as well. They're just going for a certain demographic, and you know me, I'm not a feminist by any stretch of the imagination. But just somehow, I can see what people are saying. You know, why they're sort of incensed about it. You know, because in a way, we do need to get past some of these things before, I don't know, to widen the appeal, or, I don't know,
well, just cause
to make
it's
it more
stupid.
Realistic. Yeah.
I mean, that...
It's offensive.
It's not about necessarily trying to bring in lots of female gamers to me. It's just because it's really stupid and childish. It's like, you know, drawing a picture and all the men in it look normal and all the women in it are over-sexualized and weird. I don't really understand. I don't see what the point is. It's archaic and it's weird and it should stop. It annoys me. I feel quite strongly about it, actually.
No, I do as well. It's something that, you know, we should have moved past already, you know, I think. I don't think they have to be that way in order to make these games appeal to the audience that they'll still appeal, you know, to... If anything, just make it a bit more realistic and... I don't know, I mean, what was it, Faith from Mirror's Edge was seen as this sort of not an overly sexualized character. You never actually saw her when you played the game, except maybe in a reflective surface.
Box art, I think that's right, yeah.
Hen, what do you think? Are you...
Well, there's a huge reason why I'm quiet.
So you're a proponent for...
Well, you know...
I just think there's a time and a place for everything, you know, and if you want titillation, you can find that in other ways. It doesn't have to...
It shouldn't be part of all the media that you consume.
Right.
And it basically isn't the moment, for me at least.
Well, you know...
Yeah, comics.
That's a formula that, it's been since the old days.
But that doesn't mean it needs to continue, I think.
Oh, yeah, but the thing is, do you want to risk, if you're looking at,
I don't think there is a risk, though.
Investment. Well, in their mind, if they're investing something and, to have it or not to have it is, okay, some people who don't mind not having it is fine, but there are people that are even more drawn to it if you have it. So you rather bring it in there.
No,
just hook the other people in.
Well,
that's pretty weak reasoning, I think. I mean,
well, I that's one of the aspects I think they would have thought of. I mean, as a business type of orientation, or you want this to appeal, and you're not just looking at target audience people like you and me. You're looking at the other like maybe the real teenagers who do want that in there, and. So you said, okay, I rather have, hook the teenagers in too and then still have these people who don't mind having it. I mean, you're not going to not play a game because there's a hot chick in there, or you're going to play for other aspects of it. But if they can
hook in
the other guy.
If the gameplay is good, I'll still enjoy it, But it will annoy me that there is this character who's basically there as eye candy.
Yeah, I think, it's getting more and more annoying. And for people who care about that kind of thing, which, is, I think, going to be more mature, I mean, there's a place for both. I'll concede that, there obviously has been a market for it. But I think a lot of people have just gone along with it because it's become, part of the milieu, and I just don't think it needs to be. So I don't know.
Is that you that has the fireworks, John?
Yes, sorry.
Okay, it's all right.
Probably should say that it's Guy Fawkes Night in the UK. So
sounds like somebody using a hammer. Have you guys played that PS3 game where?
No.
You play. There's a murder and you have to solve it. But it's a unique where, when you apply lipstick, you got to do a mini game.
Heavy Rain?
Yeah, Heavy Rain. There he goes. I haven't played it, but is that something eye candy-ish, like you guys were saying, or is it something...
I think they try to address it in the game.
Because I know there's some guys that had said it was so well done that they actually feel for the girl in there. And, that's one of the... reason why people want that game, because they have that appeal, but I haven't played it myself. So
I played the demo and I actually bought the game, but just haven't sat down to start playing it yet. So it's on my pile of shame. But I was going to say it kind of reminds me of the new Tomb Raider that's coming out. I don't know if you guys have seen any of the footage, but they've tried to make, ironically, Lara Croft has been the poster child for over-sexualized characters, and they're obviously trying to reinvent the series. It's a prequel.
Right.
But she's...
You're kidding me?
No,
I was in it for the puzzles. I don't think there was any... But I'm just...
Well, I think the story with Tomb Raider that tells the most about it was that apparently originally when they were first sort of messing about with the Lara Croft, the model for her, one of the guys sort of responsible took the slider sort of that controlled the size of her breasts and for a joke put it right to the maximum, and that's where it stayed. Everybody was very happy with that. They thought it was brilliant.
It's like a weird science.
Yeah, exactly. You can't believe that could happen, but, so that's why she's as developed a character right. as she is.
It's like, I mean, it wouldn't hook me in for, even if she was like a an old lady, because, like I said, it was in the novelty of the puzzles and just the exploration was what drew me in. But, you know, if they can put that in and hook up some other teenagers in, I think that was the reasoning of going back to what I said before.
But I guess it depends on the demographic once again. I think, you know, there are games that can appeal to a wide audience. I don't think any teenager will sort of say, oh, I'm not playing that. You know, she's not a double D, you know, cup, you know, and just throw it down. I think, a gamer is a gamer. If the game's got good gameplay, that's what you're going to go in for. Or, you know, has an interesting story or something. I still maintain, if you want eye candy, like if you just, I mean, we have the internet, it's just so freely available. It doesn't make sense to me to shoehorn it into a game where it doesn't sense, you know. I mean, it just makes absolutely no sense. I mean, it happens in films as well. I mean, and TV. There's so many shows now. Sorry, just to continue on this rant.
Go ahead.
But, you know, so many American TV shows you watch and it's like, this is a pretty good show, but everyone's ridiculously attractive, you know, and... Yeah, I mean, I get the fact that people don't want to look at ugly people in general, but there is something to be said for throwing a few average, you know, just people that look normal in once in a while, you know, please, you know. Anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things I've been watching recently, I don't know if you know about it, Hen, but it's been quite a big thing here in the UK, is Downton Abbey. And it's basically about the stately home in, you know, just before and during and now, just about after the First World War. Mm-hmm. And the best character in it is the Dowager Countess, who is an old woman, basically. And it's a bit sad that actually most of the other women in it are conventionally reasonably attractive. Although not all of them, actually. I think they do a reasonable job of trying to make it fairly realistic. The cook, for example, is very competent as a cook, but is obviously not there to do, you know, to look pretty. She's there to cook, so yeah, she does that.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm not for the implementation of all these sexual exploits. I'm just saying that might be, you know, one of their thinking as a business aspect of it. And you know, I don't know for sure, but you know, what if, you know, Sarah Croft was a male character? I think they were interviewing the programmers, and they said, you know, if you were going to spend hours and hours on a tune running around, I'd rather be looking at a girl than, you know, a guy. And that's why they changed to a girl. And, you know, that's their business aspect. I mean, I'm not saying it's awesome or, you know, it's the right thing to do. I'm just saying that's, I mean, Lara Croft, I think, is more memorable because it's a girl instead of a guy, because they want to.
Well, she's often quoted as.
Go on, sorry.
No, I was going to say, she's often quoted as one of these great sort of feminist icons in gaming, and if, as you say, it was just because actually the people designing the game preferred to look at a woman when they were playing than a man, that strikes me as a bit weak, really. I mean,
well, that's the interview I saw with you know, I might be wrong, it's been a while, but
no, well, I've heard similar things people have said about, you know, when they're playing Mumorpugas, they like to have a female avatar rather than the male one, just because if you're going to be watching someone all the time, it might as well be a woman.
Yeah.
Which is, again, you know, I mean, it's fine, but it's a bit weird, isn't it? Maybe it isn't. Maybe it's normal. Maybe I'm weird.
Yeah, well, I certainly would play it anyways, even though it's, you know, if it's a guy, but like I said, their mentality is like, okay, if we're going to put a girl there, it's not going to drive away my type of audience that's like me. But if they're going to, you know, chances of bringing in or like making it more unique to bring in the other audience, they're going to do that too. So I think that's one of the aspects. I'm not saying it's, a, like I said, not a right thing, but
no, I think
it's just...
Yeah, we understand that. It's just I'm trying to believe that, you know, there's a better way to think about it instead of just kind of going, well, you know, we're just trying to appeal to everyone. I just think it's flawed logic, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a place for everything. You know, there will be games that will continue to do this, and that's probably fine, you know, for as long as they make money, which they probably will. But I think it's good to, the question comes up, you know, and the fact that, you know, two out of the three of us, at least, I mean, not that you're not acknowledging it, Hen, but at least we feel this way, you know, I think it says something.
So. Well, I you know, I don't know if it's cultural, but, you know, in Britain over there, or England, the TV shows are not, you know, their actors and actresses are not, you know, on the A-list. And that's what I like about it sometimes. It's just basically down to earth. And the shows that are famous over there are not about, you know, 90210 or like the, you know, well, who's sleeping with another. It's more about, you know, the real life stuff. And you, they don't, you know, typecast somebody who's beautiful. They typecast ordinary people. And that's one of the things that, you know, appeals to me over there. But I think, you know, The Office made a good translation over here too, because they didn't hire anybody who's like, you know, A-list on the look. They just hired people that look normal, and it still became successful. So,
yeah,
is it true that most of the shows over there in England are, you know, not really, you know, the looks are not a priority. It's more of the ability of the actor or the actress.
I think there are shows that can
go to that formula.
I think yes, as a general trend, would you say, Will? Maybe.
I, you know, Doctor Who, I love, and most of the people there aren't lookers, which is fine. Well, the only exposure for British shows I have over here is, you know, the public television, and that's what I see. Well, I rather watch shows that are more story oriented and not worry about the looks of the character. Even like ordinary people actually enhances the drama for if you do it right, than to have somebody, you know, everybody looks good and, you know, have a good show, because it's more like down to earth, and you have it has more weight if it's just, you know, ordinary people.
Well, that's how I feel about games, so.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah.
Or at least where it makes sense for that to be the case.
But it's really hard to pull off. I mean, because, you know, it's like, you know, how many movies, if out of 1,000 movies, how many movies are, you know, good? And it's just similar to, you know, if you were to sit down and you write a series about people and then you cast people, what are the chances of this going to be good? So, you know, if it's going to be bad with good people, it's, you know, passable. But it's going to be bad with awful-looking people, it's going to be, you know, worse. I mean, that's my opinion.
I know what you're saying. Yeah, at least make it pretty, and then people will tune in just to, you know, have their eyeballs, you know.
Not that I prefer it. I don't prefer bad, period. It's just, you know, I think that's one of the mentality that they would put into it's something.
Style of
they
invest. Substance, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, we've kind of gotten back to what I was saying about Lara Croft. The new game, I mean, although she's still an attractive young girl, I think they've made her, in general, look more realistic. And their idea was to make a connection with the player, in that you can actually see her discomfort, which I guess that's in terms of people's enjoyment out of playing a game can vary. But the idea is to make you feel what she's going through, you know.
I still sorry to interrupt, John, I still remember the episode of Spaced where,
exactly. sometimes where, I just feel like drowning things.
Exactly, yeah. But Tim is drowning her. It's great.
Slightly frightening misogyny when you think about it, but Hen, if you haven't seen Spaced, you've probably had it recommended to you, but it's such a great show.
Spaced,
yeah, from the guys that were in Shaun of the Dead.
Oh, I see.
Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
They did a TV series?
Yeah,
before Shaun of the Dead, that sort of team, the same director and you know, same actors.
Right.
Bar, Jessica Stevenson?
Yeah.
Jessica Hines now, I guess. But anyway, great show. Excellent show.
All right, I think definitely
you can get it over there.
Yeah, I'll definitely get it and
on Dovdy.
Check it out.
It's really good.
So yeah, but back to Lara Croft. She's I think you're supposed to be able to see the pain on her face, you know, like as she's going through this sort of really uncomfortably cold water and that kind of stuff. And I like the idea of that, making a connection. I think it works reasonably well with Nathan Drake, who's obviously an analogue to Indiana Jones. You know, he's fallible and kind of limps around when he gets injured. I mean, it's not... It's very cinematic, you know. Obviously, Lara Croft will be probably similar, but...
Well, it's a good step. I mean, I'm supportive if they want to go in that direction because... I like, for example, I mean, it's not like I don't want to go there, but it's not unsexy if you know, go to more human. Like I said, that that Rain game.
Heavy Rain.
Right. The appeal of her was that she's human and she's approachable, and not something what Lara Croft was. You know, the first one was she was just basically a sex doll, and I think the attraction is more personable if you know you feel the character's pain and you feel her flaws and you know her mundaneness. So if they go in that route, I think it'll have more sexual appeal than you know what she was back then, which is just a double D person.
Yeah.
So I'm all for the direction if they want to take it there. Will you, are you wishing they would go back to the double D?
No. not really. I'm kind of hoping that, you know, one day we won't even be talking about this because it won't be a thing.
Relevant, yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
I think that...
I mean, it would be like, you know, talking about, oh, well, you know, women in the boardroom, do they really belong? Oh. I don't know. They make emotional decisions sometimes based on their hormones. Their uteruses make them do strange things. I don't really want that
they
kind
do.
Of attitude anymore.
They do, don't they?
No.
Sorry, I shouldn't laugh.
On the record, on the record, I was just kidding.
Yeah, no, I'm sure.
Yeah, so thanks, guys, for episode 2 of Geek Word of Mouth podcast.